And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Shamrock from atop Ohio Stadium. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna after Ohio State's 21-10 victory over Notre Dame. Matt, I thought coming into the game, Notre Dame's defense would play well. It would be on Notre Dame's offense to sort of keep up. I think they got half of that done. I think, you know, Marcus Freeman talked post-game, you know, the moral victories, you know, finishing, sort of like the coachisms. But there's probably a lot of truth in them as well, because I think Notre Dame was there in the fourth quarter of a high-stakes game on the road. And it, in some ways, it did feel a little bit reminiscent to me of Georgia in 2019, where you feel like Notre Dame gave a very good account of themselves, but at some point, you know, you're looking for Notre Dame to get over the hump instead of giving an account of themselves, win a game like this. And they were there. They were in this game until midway through the fourth quarter when the defense ultimately wore down.
Yeah, fun environment, fun atmosphere, everything we hoped it would be. And then the game was pretty much the opposite of how we all thought this would go, right? I thought Notre Dame would be able to run the football a little bit more effectively. I did not think Ohio State would run the ball as well as they did. And they really, I kept thinking on that last kind of game-breaking drive, 7+ minutes, 95 yards, the score that makes it 21-10. Even then, I still thought, you know, this is a Ryan Day coached football team. They are establishing the run to set up the pass. At some point, they're going to beat Notre Dame deep, and they're going to turn the engine on, so to speak, offensively. And that never really happened. And, you know, you went to Notre Dame's postgame stuff. I went to Ohio State's. Ryan Day was one happy man. As happy as I've seen a coach. Look, he won. I get it. But, you know, he comes in with a big smile on his face. And the first question is, can you describe the offensive struggles you guys had early on? And he was laughing. He's like, I'm not going to answer that. We just won by 11 points against a top five team in the country. And he gave a whole thing about, you know, I don't know if we win this game last year. You know, our toughness was questioned all offseason. So it was a throwback Big Ten game, so to speak. Ohio State is a more talented team, as we knew coming in, and they ended up winning or having to win in a way that I don't think any of us saw coming in. But I don't – yeah, there are no moral victories. I mean, you don't come out here happy if you're Notre Dame, but it was like we did enough talking in the lead up to this game where we presented like what's the scenario where Notre Dame can kind of hold their heads up high and the fan base, and you know, it's late at night, they're probably emotional right now, but isn't crushed
right.
Coming out of this game. Not saying, oh, we will never be this good again. How many more recruiting classes do we need to compete with Ohio State's of the world? No, like this was a good game between two good teams. The better team won. If you're Notre Dame, like there's no reason to think you shouldn't go 11-1 this year. Obviously, it's not that simple. But as far as big picture approach, nothing I feel about the Irish change after tonight.
For me, it was I came away very underwhelmed by Notre Dame's defensive line. As well as their defensive play, the fact that they sacked C.J. Stroud on what was going to be his first pass attempt and then did not sack him the rest of the game on 34 pass attempts was alarming, because I thought that was going to be a strength of Notre Dame's all season, where you had an excellent pass rush, a great defensive line. I'm not sure I saw a great defensive line performance tonight against an Ohio State offensive line that was kind of in question. And yet, defensively, I thought Notre Dame played well. You know, their secondary was much better than advertised. And I get it that Jackson Smith and Jigba basically was a DNP in this game after Brandon Joseph rocked him early in the game. But, you know, Emeka Buka is an excellent player. They have some killers on the outside at Ohio State beyond Jackson Smith and Jigba, Marvin Harrison. And, you know, like Benjamin Morrison, you know, Jaden Mickey, I know, gave up a touchdown, but I didn't see a lot of the moment being too big for them. And I think it sets up well the rest of the season. Maybe Notre Dame is a little bit more talented in the secondary than I would have thought, which, who knows, maybe that will compensate for the pass rush maybe not being where I thought it would be. And again, it's game one, that can improve during the season, but they needed more pass rush tonight. I thought that, like, to me, the play of the game was there was a third and two or a third and three. Riley Mills flushes Stroud out. Jack Kaiser's closing down on him. And he makes like a Heisman level throw on the sideline. And it was just, to me, at least a reminder that Ohio State has Heisman contenders on its roster and Notre Dame doesn't have enough of them. There was a talent edge. And I thought it was very telling after the game. Ryan Day said, you know, we finally wanted to be known as something more than talented. Like Notre Dame needs to get to a point where teams are describing Notre Dame as like, wow, they're really talented. And tonight was just a reminder of kind of the gap there. It's not insurmountable. It's not like it can't be narrowed, but there is a gap that exists. And, you know, when you walk around the stadium and you see people in their Catholics versus draft pick shirts, it's it's a reminder of sort of what Ohio State is known for and where Notre Dame is trying to go with Marcus Freeman.
To illustrate that point, I mean, the go-ahead touchdown, the biggest play of the game to that point, Xavier Johnson, 24-yard touchdown, he's a walk-on. I did not know that coming in because he didn't look like a walk-on. But you know what? He went down and made the hit on that following kickoff as well. Right. I mean, that's, you know, again, we've had some version of this conversation every time they're in a big game like this, right? Like, you know, not as bad as Clemson 2018 where Julian Love goes down and the whole defense goes to hell. But, like, there's just always these teams that are consistently stacking top five recruiting classes. They're consistently not just getting to the college football playoff, but winning games in the college football playoff. It doesn't really matter if you lose Jackson Smith and Jigba, who's arguably the best receiver in the country. You've still got other guys right there who are awesome. I didn't know anything about Mayan Williams coming into this game because we spent so much time hyping up Trey Henderson.
Now, watching him in warmups, that is one thick dude. I mean, he is a well-put-together running back. And, I mean, he was sort of what I think Notre Dame wanted Audric Estime to be in the fourth quarter, but Notre Dame was not in a position to run the ball, and Ohio State was. That is a man with a football in his hands. He was very, very impressive to me pregame and during game, and certainly late in game. Ohio State had they just had more weapons at their disposal. Right. Like their second best back was a top 10 overall prospect. That's not where Notre Dame is right now, and it's sort of where Notre Dame needs to go. But I mean, to your point about Patterson being out, this is a quote from Freeman after the game. If you can't handle having a loss of one guy, we're not going to be able to win as many games as we want. Like, that's sort of where Notre Dame is right now, is that when you remove one key piece, it's much harder for Notre Dame to overcome that than it is teams like Ohio State that have stacked top five recruiting classes on top of one another for four straight years.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how the narrative in this game, at least on Ohio State's end, got flipped a little bit, right? Like, we had Ari Wasserman on last week, and you know, he was joking, but wasn't joking, that the reaction to his sit down with Ryan Day from a lot of fans were like, is he on the hot seat, right? Like, as ridiculous as that sounds. But if he lost tonight's game after losing to Michigan last year, this town would have been going crazy. You know that, and I know that, and I appreciated how Ryan Day leaned into that a little bit post-game. I mean, everyone who spoke on Ohio State's behalf post-game used some different version of, you know, we were called soft all last year. We got tired of hearing that. Ryan Day said, I don't know if we win this kind of game last year. Well, you know what he did last year after they were quote-unquote out-toughened by Michigan in the finale? Hired Justin Fry to run his offensive line. Hired Jim Knowles to coordinate his defense. I asked Jim Knowles post-game, where do you go from here if you hold the number five team in the country at 10 points? Like, how do you, like, keep these guys humble? Because that was an outstanding performance. And he said, I'll find something. But those two hires, I won't go so far to say they made the difference tonight, but they were two of the most important parts of this game. And for that to happen as quick as it did is very encouraging if you're Ohio State. And again, if you're Notre Dame, I don't come out of this thing discouraged. In fact, we haven't said one word about Tyler Buchner yet, who I thought more than held his own for a guy who will probably never play in an environment quite like this ever again and had to make his first career start.
He will be starting at A&M in 2 years. So
Buchner will?
Yeah. Might be like a little bit like this, but you know, he'll have.
Oh, when they play at A&M. Sorry, yeah, right. I'm like, what, did I miss an NIL joke here?
No. No, yeah, that's 26 starts later. I thought, you know, he starts 8 for 8 I didn't think he looked overwhelmed by the moment, which is not something I'd say I was concerned about, but it's certainly something you want to verify that it's not a problem, and it wasn't. But then he finished 2 for 10. You know, Marcus Freeman referenced and sort of his ankle being injured a little bit. I asked Buckner about it. He sort of dismissed it entirely, said it wasn't an issue. I do, you know, if you've got a bad ankle, it's sort of hard to plant, sort of hard to throw and be accurate. You know, and when you finish 2 of 10, did not complete a pass in the fourth quarter. I think Notre Dame ran 7 plays for 12 yards in the fourth quarter. Mm. Like, that's definitely not good enough. But you can, you could at least come away from this game saying, like, okay, I think I know where Tommy Rees wants to take this, and be perturbed that it wasn't farther along than it was tonight. 10 points, not really threatening to score in the second half. That was not good enough.
Offensive PI.
Yeah, the offensive PI was a killer penalty. And really, you should be able to overcome one offensive PI, not have that ruin your entire half. The touchdown drive they had in the second quarter, I thought he was dealing on that. That was excellent creative play calling. I like sort of the jet motions, the sort of zone read concept options that they have in there, the different personnel groups. I thought he really had Jim Knowles on his heels for a second. But then it said a lot to me about where Marcus Freeman sees the offense and saw the talent disparity tonight, when he said, like, no, that was the game plan we wanted, because the most important part of the game plan for Notre Dame was controlling the clock and stopping Ohio State from running 87 plays. The problem was that Notre Dame, I think, only ended up running 48 plays in the game, which is incredible. You know, they sort of took the air out of their own ball in addition to Ohio State's. You know, and like if Notre Dame's going to compete to not only make the college football playoff, but challenge to win a game in that, you can't keep running into games where you concede the talent advantage in the game plan. And that was something similar to that what happened in Georgia in 2019. It was, how do we make the best game plan of a situation where we know they're better than we are? And that's, you got to recruit your way out of that. You got to develop your way out of that. You know, you and I were down on the field before the game. It was just like, you didn't have to follow recruiting very closely to spot all the 5-star prospects who came to this game, including a former basketball 5-star prospect who now plays for the Lakers. Like, it was, there was a lot of talent here today. And that's sort of where Ohio State is. It's where Notre Dame has to go. And we didn't talk to Marcus about recruiting after the game, because it's kind of like, this was your first full game. It's not really a conversation you get into, but they got to get to a point where they feel like they're more even with Ohio State. So you don't have to, you know, build your game plan around compensating or conceding the talent advantage. That's not a sustainable approach long-term.
It was interesting because I felt like, I don't know if this was strategic or if things just slowed down or if Ohio State's defense had figured things out, but it seemed like it was taking on a much more of a aggressive approach early on. I mean, Buckner dealt on that first, throw of the game, right?
Yeah, he got pretty hit. Big. And yeah.
And then
got jumped in front of Styles.
They give up the touchdown to Xavier Johnson to go down 14-10. They're backed up deep. And I think at their own 13-yard line, they call a timeout 12 seconds away from the third quarter ending.
Right after change of possession.
After a change of possession, yeah. Right as this crowd is, which was dead at halftime, comes back to life because they took the lead. And Buckner deals a 32-yarder to Brandon Lindsey. That's right on the money. And you're thinking, wow, like, this kid's got it. And it just kind of fizzled out from there. You mentioned, or Marcus Freeman mentioned, the ankle. I did not notice that at all in the game. I don't know if you did.
It was, I remember noticing it. I don't know if it happened on this play, but on the play where he threw real high to Mayer,
yes.
I think it was a 17-yard gain. Mayer came across the field, fumbled it, picked it up.
Right.
I thought that Buckner was hobbling a little bit there. Certainly wasn't enough to knock him out of the game. But you just sort of wonder if you're a running quarterback and you got a bad ankle, the accuracy part aside, does that sort of take away the run element? Does that make you less explosive? And you know, I think for Notre Dame's offense is to achieve everything that it wants to achieve this year, one, that you got to develop more from the wide receiver room than you did in game one, but you got to have an explosive threat all the time at quarterback running the ball. And, you know, I think Buckner just, I don't know if he wore down or he was hurt, but you know, I thought that sort of faded through the course of the game for whatever reason.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Biggest revelation tonight for me was Benjamin Morrison.
Oh, my goodness.
That was not a guy we heard much, if anything, about.
He was on my list of guys who had the best camps, which is not to say I expected him to play as well as he did tonight. It was like, this is a good guy for the future. He's really impressed.
This is one of their best players against Ohio State.
Maybe he's their best corner right now, which was shocking. I thought that Maris Liafau, after being kind of banged up for a lot of August, played really well. He was disruptive. Riley Mills got in on some plays. Howard Cross had the sack. I thought the hit that Brandon Joseph put on Jackson Smith and Jigba at the beginning of the game was kind of a tone setter for Notre Dame on the sideline, and just like kind of knocked him out for a while. So it's like, I think Notre Dame, I think there's something, I don't know if we talked about this in our podcast with Ari or not, but like Notre Dame had to be good enough to make Ohio State believe that it was in a game. It was in a game, and it absolutely
did.
It hit that mark. It made Ryan Day think about,
he punted right, down from the 40.
Yeah, that was the moment where you're like, okay, Ryan Day knows he's in a game here and he has to sort of be careful. He can't just chuck it all over the place. They got to that point. And they got to that point pretty quickly. So I was very impressed with that. I was interested in what you thought about the safety blitz that turned into the touchdown to Xavier Johnson at the end of the third quarter. Because I felt like the defense was on its stuff, was not getting gassed. And then it really kind of, it was sort of the first gamble I felt like Notre Dame took offensively or defensively and blew up in their face a little bit. And I thought Al Golden had a outstanding game. That was, but that call was like, I was confused about why they got into that one.
That was, if memory serves, Trick Bracey goes down the play before Jaden Mickey comes in.
Jaden Mickey was on Xavier Johnson on the touchdown.
So yeah. I get it. It's, I mean, you talk about boom or bust. If they force Stroud into an errant throw there, Ohio State's either forced to go for it down four in a very suffocating environment, or they're kicking a field goal.
But it's like down one. You hadn't gotten pressure all game.
You hadn't. I just wonder, do you try something different to protect the new guy who's in, who obviously needed all the help he could get? I get why he did it. I'm not saying I agree with it. We're talking about Al Golden being the best hire of the offseason and not Jim Knowles, if that works. And both could still be true later on the season. I get it. But I think, I mean, look, that was a go-ahead touchdown. This place was, first off, I've never been in an environment like this before. As far as star power, pregame.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even remember all the like dignitaries. None of whom were the 2002 championship team, who had some studs.
It had a USC 2005 vibe to it, honestly. I mean, that was like a kind of a celebrities were out at Notre Dame pregame. Yeah, but yeah, there were a ton of people back here. I mean, it was like, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, Carl Dale Jones, Justin Fields, like.
But those are Ohio State guys. Yeah. Like, I'm walking around getting ready to go upstairs, and I saw Rich Paul. I'm like, oh, Rich Paul's here. That's right. He's with Chase Young. He read Chase Young. Oh, and there's LeBron and Bronny James. And then some people are whispering Odell might be here. I don't think she was, but that's Rich Paul's girlfriend, so that would make sense. But, like, then I see Joe Burrow in the end zone, which I think this was his first time back at Ohio State since he had played at Ohio State. Andre Iguodala was here. Evan Turner and Jason Tatum were here. Evan Turner obviously played here. But it was like, I talked to Bill Landis, our late great Ohio State writer.
Sorry, Ari.
And he said, this was not. He'd never seen this much. He'd seen LeBron here before. He'd seen it loud here before, but he hadn't seen like the combination of just the event with this. Like, we're jaded in our day-to-day jobs. That was as close as I've been to starstruck in this job, where like everywhere I turn, I'm bumping into someone who's like close to a billionaire. Like, it was cool.
Like, Justin Fields, like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
LeBron James, I was like, holy shit, that's LeBron
and Joe
James.
Burrow. Yeah. I mean, made the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah. And I mean, I think to your point, like, Notre Dame handled that environment.
Right. I'm like, Tyler,
really well.
Tyler Buckner, your first career start isn't only on primetime, it isn't only against the number two team in the country with 100,000 fans. You've got like this generation's greatest athlete on the other sideline basically booing you, like, for lack of a better analogy. Like, that is an intimidating environment. And I thought they handled all that part of it very, very well. And I thought the way they took the crowd out of the game by playing the way they did in the first half was extremely important, because, again, we're all thinking when Notre Dame's winning, oh my God, they can do this here.
Right.
And as everyone on Ohio State side will tell you, they probably do it last year if Ohio State doesn't make the adjustments on their coaching staff that they made this offseason. If they don't look themselves in the mirror and essentially get humbled the way they did at the end of last year. Ryan Day brought up the point that escaped me for sure, because Michigan State was terrible against Ohio State last year. But he said, I think this was our fourth straight top 10 game. Michigan State, Michigan, Utah, Notre Dame. And this one was top five. So that's a very big stretch for anyone, let alone very big stretch. And they went 3-1 in that. But it was an awesome environment. It was really, really cool to be here, independent of the stakes and independent of the fact it was week one. Like, it was just an awesome scene.
What would be your, if you're one of our listeners, like, how would you advise them to feel about Notre Dame football the rest of the season after tonight?
Encouraged. I mean, look, Marcus Freeman is 0-2 as a head football coach. That's reality.
Two top 10 games where you were leading in the second half of both of them.
Exactly. That's where the comparisons end for me. So I think there's going to be a segment that said, okay, like, the honeymoon period's over. This guy won the offseason, much as one can. Let's see some results. And I think those results are coming. Not that I didn't. We talked about this beforehand. There is, water leak almost takes out our mic. I was able to picture a scenario coming into this game where Ohio State does what everyone thought they would do. They cover the spread, which they almost did. They blow Notre Dame out, and Notre Dame's still, like, whatever, Ohio State's that good. Notre Dame can go and win 11 games this year. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say Notre Dame's going to go 11-1, because there's still, some holes on this roster. We still don't know how they'll respond in games against the BYUs of the world, who looked really good today, and USC, and et cetera. But I mean, I come out of this encouraged because we've seen the results on the recruiting trail in a short period of time with Marcus Freeman as a head coach. We've seen tonight that at least under his watch, they're not going to be overwhelmed by a moment. And again, who knows what Clemson looks like comes November. Certainly, right. It's a more talented roster, but it's also going to be a home game for Notre Dame. I come out of this as encouraged as you can possibly be in defeat.
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't go that far just because, like, there were parts of Notre Dame that I thought were going to be better, that were going to be bankable assets, like the pass rush.
I think Ohio State had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, or like the offensive line being better. You know, and I know Patterson's hurt, but they really struggled to run the ball. You know, they had 12 yards in the fourth quarter. I think Buckner will be good. They need something more from the receivers than what they got. And I don't really know how to like handicap what happened tonight where no receiver had more than one catch.
Only Michael Mayer. Yeah.
You know,
Lorenzo was relatively quiet by his standards.
Yeah. He's double teamed and still, like, if he's getting double teamed as much as I think he was getting double teamed, somebody else should have been open and Tyler Buckner either couldn't find him or they couldn't actually get open. So that there's something to grow on there. But I guess I would come out of it thinking, like, do I think Notre Dame is going to go 11-1? Probably not. But I felt like at the beginning of the season, I thought this was a 10-2 team. After tonight, I feel like it's still a 10-2 team. And I would like to see, you know, you just want to see progress from here, win the games you should. And then when Clemson comes around, it looks more like, I don't want to, yeah, I'll say it, like, looks more like a fair fight than right. what tonight was, which is kind of what how the first Clemson game in 2020 went, even if, you know, Trevor Lawrence.
Brother of that quarterback from that game and this year's game was on the field today for Ohio State.
Uyunglele was here today, which was just one of the many, many five-star prospects in town. So I think, I mean, Notre Dame has a lot to grow on. I think that's fine. I think that's healthy. I would like to think that the Notre Dame fan base probably won't come away too frustrated with what they saw tonight, with the exception of maybe there's the offense bogging down in the fourth quarter and never really feeling like they were going to get. Like, did you feel like Notre Dame was going to score at the end?
I did not. I did not at all.
It felt like chunk plays only. You know, it on that last drive, it was like either they're going to strip me and Williams here or it's going to be a touchdown.
Right.
Like, that, there was just no in between there. So it's, I think if I was a Notre Dame fan, I would feel encouraged, but not like delirious over tonight. We're like, oh, look how close it was. I would feel like some pangs of frustration about how it got away.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we made the 2019 Georgia analogy. That was my takeaway from that game because they had the ball driving on Georgia's side of the field with a chance to win that game.
But did you think they were going to?
I didn't think they were, but like they also were overwhelmed by the moment in that game. They had how many false start penalties? Yeah, even geez. Brian Kelly fell on the sword post game about how he failed to prepare them for that environment. Like that was a much more of a winnable game, I think, than this one. I thought they weren't going to go back and forth with Ohio State. I just didn't think it was that kind of game, even as they're up 10-7 in the third quarter. I'm thinking they've got to add on to this lead right now because once Ohio State gets a lead, I just don't see this going tit for tat and Buckner answering Stroud.
It was interesting to sort of hear Marcus Freeman describe the mentality in that space because he said like we had the game in the pace that we wanted. Field position was how we wanted it. You know, just sort of time of possession was where they wanted it. But he said as soon as Ohio State went up 14-10, we just had to start throwing the ball. And I don't know if you could have been more patient because Ohio State was stopping the run. I don't think that was like a way Notre Dame was going to come back and win the game. But definitely a lack of explosive options for Notre Dame in the past game showed up tonight, which it may sound strange to say when you had, what, a 30-yard pass to Lindsey, a 54-yard pass to Stiles, a 31-yard pass to Salerno, and heck, even a 22-yard pass to Bauman, which was like part of the drive where Reese was really dealing, I thought. So, yeah, it was not a game where once it got to 14-10, it was very difficult for me to see Notre Dame with a path back into it, which is like,
but even then, like
4 points.
They make the Lindsey play, and I get to midfield.
Right.
And I'm thinking, wow, like, here we go. Start of the fourth quarter. Notre Dame's driving with a chance to take the lead, and I think that's right before Salerno.
That was Buckner's last completion of the game.
And that was right before the OPI, right? Which I'd have to look at it. I just, that ball was so far overthrown everyone. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know the rationale.
Same way DPI has to be catchable. Like, does OPI have to be interceptable? I don't know.
It did not feel like it was.
But that set them back.
Yeah.
Big time.
And then you couldn't, you couldn't overcome that. And that was sort of their last real opportunity to do it. After game, post game, obviously talked to Freeman, Tyler Buchner came in, Jack Kaiser came in. That was it for Notre Dame. I thought, I don't think it was like very angsty the way probably the Ohio State was, I guess, where you're like, they felt like they had something to prove and they heard what had been written and said about them all off season. But certainly these post games, I think you can only take so much away from it, but I sort of listen to hear, like, are the players repeating back what the coach probably said in the locker room? And when Tyler Buchner's talking about the moment and he says, the field's 53-3 by yada, yada, like, that's a straight Freemanism. Yeah. So I think that the players were sort of spitting back at us what the coaches had said to them in the locker room, which I think is, it's positive when you have your finger on the pulse of your roster. But I think Freeman definitely is there with that. And I wonder how, like, what practice will be like this week, how, whether they'd be frustrated or angry or just sort of generally pissed off the coaches are, the players are after tonight, or as they get farther away from it. I'm not saying it's a moral victory because that's what Freeman said. It definitely was not. But do they feel, in the moment tonight, are you hyper-focused on what you did wrong? And as you get farther away from it, do you sort of pick out the dozens of things they did well tonight and feel like, okay, there's a lot to build on here moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, this is where you see the differences, good or bad, with a new head coach, right? I did not think, and the record might not bear this out, but like we've both heard and probably reported enough over the later Brian Kelly years where like this did not seem like a program that handled losses particularly well. I mean, 2019 Michigan comes to mind immediately. They should have lost that Virginia Tech game, and the offense coordinator gets fired at the end of the year despite a good record season. 2020, they lose that last Clemson game, and to be fair, no one was going to beat that Alabama team. But certainly there was a doom and gloom going into that. And then last year, they lose to Cincinnati. That Virginia Tech game was weird. They pull it out, but that whole week leading up was very weird. It was real tense. They like canceled interviews on us at the last second and gave us all walk-ons. Like, they were always just trying something different for the sake of trying different, publicly and privately, it felt like, after a defeat. And I don't think it's going to turn out that way this year. We'll see. When's the last time they lost an opener? Texas, right? 16?
Yeah, that was the last one.
They've had some good openers.
Yes, they've played well.
Florida State last year, Texas 15.
Yeah, I
Michigan 18.
Right. Yeah, I mean that was the best one of that span, right? So it's I thought that we're always asking Marcus Freeman and coaches like, hey, what did you learn? Yada yada. I feel like as far as if you're a Notre Dame fan and you're watching closely, I do think you learned a lot about the way Marcus Freeman sees football, like. I think you tweeted during the game when Ryan Day punted from plus territory, like it was an honoring of Jim Tressel.
I also tweeted Marcus Freeman, the linebacker, would have really appreciated the game Marcus Freeman was coaching in tonight, because that was an old school Big Ten game.
It was a very throwback performance. I think Notre Dame will continue to have a very hard edge about it. And I think that's sort of where I'm interested to see like where next week goes. Like if we're talking about Notre Dame's pass rush or lack thereof, like, how hard does Freeman push during the week? Like, he already called out, the kickoff return getting fixed. Like, that was really one of the first things he said after the game, was the kickoff return was poor and needed to get fixed. And then when somebody asked him about, like, hey, the punting was really good.
I was just going to say, what was really good tonight? The punting was great.
He was like, yes, that's true. That felt good. But the kickoff return really needs to get fixed. We want to be aggressive in that role. And like, they didn't do enough to warrant being aggressive tonight. So it's... I'm interested to sort of like learn about him, how he responds after a loss in real time. Because like the loss after the Fiesta Bowl, like the program blew up. There's like seven coaches leaving. Like there was a million things happening and he wasn't really like in it. Now you're in it. You have to respond and get to respond in 7 days. And that I'll be interested to sort of hear a little bit about what he's like in practices this week. Because I think you could get you're going to get more of a real vibe of like, this is who Marcus Freeman is. And I think it's going to be like a very hard edge. You know, there are a lot of good things to take away from tonight, but my hunch would be like, he will probably ruminate more on what they didn't do tonight than make the players feel good about what they did.
Me and you both over the last couple of weeks have heard from multiple listeners who basically brought up the question of like, do we need to worry about this guy maybe not being like, it's a player's coach thing being taken too far. Is he tough enough on these guys? To which me and you kind of laughed at because, you know, we've heard some of the stories. We've seen him, you know, off camera. We know his upbringing. Like, I think this week is when you see Marcus Freeman, son of military man, like really come out.
I agree.
Day to day in the program.
Yeah. And I think that's who he is. I think that we saw a lot of who he is tonight. I think we'll continue to see who he is moving forward. He's, I think, a much more harder edge guy who, like, I think if his dad was like, you're profiled in GQ, what the hell is that? Like, that's like, that's not like the real Marcus Freeman. Like, it's a part of him, but like, that's not the core of Marcus Freeman. Like, the core of Marcus Freeman is like the interior run game needs to be held a lot better. Where was the pressure off the edge from, you know, defensive ends who are supposed to be big time? Like, how do you get tougher in the fourth quarter where they're not shoving you off the ball? You know, God bless the bomber jackets that we have that he was also wearing in the GQ photo shoot. But like, that's not what like Marcus Freeman is really about. He's much more about like, how do you run the ball? How do you stop the run? All the other stuff doesn't really matter.
As a Knicks fan, I got flashbacks of Pat Riley, who's like on the cover of GQ. He's Showtime, Magic Johnson. Then he goes to the Knicks and they become the toughest team probably ever. And they basically grind their way to the finals. Like, yeah, there is a lot beneath the surface there that I think we're going to see come out throughout the course of the season, but particularly in moments like this one when they need it, when they're coming off the feet. Because I think it would be very easy, and I think it's, you know, it's easy for us and the media, it's easy for fans to say, all right, lost by 11 on the road, the number two team in the country. We're good.
Yeah.
You got to keep that mindset away from seeping into that building, especially, frankly, when you're succeeding a coach who did a good job of that, who won 40 straight games as a favorite to close his Notre Dame career. That's, if it was that easy, other people would do it. And that was always my biggest question about not just Marcus Freeman, but whoever would eventually succeed Brian Kelly. And that will probably be the biggest question as it relates to the season this year, because this is a really good football team. They have a chance to do some really good things this year, but they need to use this one the right way.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, well, we'll wrap it up there. It's almost 1 o'clock in the morning on September 4th after Ohio State's 21-10 victory over
Brian Kelly plays today.
Yeah, so you can listen to this podcast while you're preparing to watch Florida State LSU with conflicted feelings. And I don't know if you saw the tweet from LSU's official account.
Oh, you showed me it last night.
Yes, the iconic gold helmets, which, you know, take that as you will, I suppose. So Matt and I will be back this week with another episode of the Shamrock. Probably not really getting into the nitty-gritty of previewing Marshall, but more how Notre Dame responds and gets off the mat. Post a season-opening loss, Marcus Freeman comes back to his alma mater. Notre Dame puts a scare into Ryan Day and a program that some of our colleagues think is good enough and even better than Alabama this year. Gave a good account of themselves. Ultimately, it wasn't enough in the end. So until then, he's Matt, I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.